Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are all about tasting. Everything from fair food to barbecue to special dishes made by Indiana chefs to craft beer. We'll be talking with Indiana State Fair fan Nora Spitznagle about her perfect attendance at the State Fair. And we'll also talk barbecue with participants of the 2015 Indiana State Fair Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off. And we'll hear from Cindy Shoup Casey about how the competition came about. We'll also try a few fair food treats with local chef Dean Sample of Meridian Restaurant and Bar. Then we'll hear about Dig In, A Taste of Indiana with the festival's executive director, Tom England. And we'll hear from Brew Brackets Mike Sale about a home tasting game for craft beer fans. That's all coming up here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, it's August in Indiana, and for me that means a lot of things, but honestly, not a lot of fun. It's a long, busy month with so much to do. I'd love for the month to be a gradual wrap-up of summer when we pick berries and can tomatoes and sit around bonfires and look at the stars and truly enjoy the seasonal extravaganza of summertime in Indiana. But you know what happens? August just isn't a lazy days of summer kind of month. Back to school time is here and everyone's getting into a fall routine and football will start soon and then comes Labor Day and summer will really be over. So, for me, it's easy to race through August. And that's partly why I like the Indiana State Fair. It's a hot, sticky, delicious reminder that it's still summer. So, this week, here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we've got a few State Fair stories, so that we can slow down and make summer last a little longer. And Indianapolis resident Nora Spitznagle is certainly making the most of her Indiana State Fair. She makes it a point to go to the fair every day, and she's done that for 10 years. I caught up with Nora in the midst of last year's fair-going marathon to find out how her romance with the fair started and why she goes and what she sees.
As a child growing up on a farm in Boone County, and there were four of us in 6 years, and I can't imagine how overwhelmed my parents were. So we thought that coming to the Indiana State Fair was a vacation. And so in the 60s, you know, we'd pack a lunch and go eat in the infield. Then we got to choose what we were going to have for dinner, which was something you thought about all day. And, you know, had our money from selling sweet corn that we'd buy little trinkets with. And my parents somehow convinced us that the tractor tram was a ride. I don't know how they kept us out of the Midway, but they did. And then when I moved into the neighborhood, I started entering things in the open show and loved it. But I was more of a casual fair goer, and then I moved to New Jersey and entered things in the state fair there, and I literally cried. It was one of the few times I was really homesick. There were very few entries. There were no animals there, no 4-H. So the woman was so excited that I'd entered, and she said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Indiana," and she was from Muncie.
Oh my gosh.
So the 5 years I lived there, I really tried to encourage people to enter and entered a bunch of stuff, and then it made me realize how amazing our state fair is. And the fact that it's close enough that I rode my bike today. So for the last decade, I've come every day.
10 years.
10 years.
Every day of the fair.
Yes. So the first couple days, I think, oh, I can't do this. Then near the middle, I start thinking of all the things I haven't done yet. And there's, you know, we're in Pioneer Village, and there are so many neat relationships I've made with people that I just see once a year. So to be able to catch up with them.
So now tell me what some of the contests that you've entered. I mean, I've tried your snickerdoodles.
Oh.
So those were an award winner, right?
Yes, that was the winning year. I was in 4-H and didn't do that well in baking. So it's really fun as an adult to get to come to the state fair, because if you come to 4-H, you need to win your county. And here, anybody can enter the state fair, which is amazing. So I usually do baking and make toffee, enter quick breads. I entered the Clabber Girl contest. There's lots of Indiana-centric contests, so Clabber Girl is an Indiana product. And I took it very serious, very literally. I made a quick soda bread, and other people did these fancy muffins and things. But it's so much fun to be part of the open judging, and I really learn a lot from hearing the judges' critiques.
What have you won? What kind of categories have you won in?
Snickerdoodles got first place 1 year, which is exciting. I typically get a ribbon in toffee, but I have yet to crack that number one part in that. I entered the spam contest for years, but I haven't done that for a while. But my new favorite thing, and it's only the second or third year at the state fair, it's the Midwest Alliance Heirloom Recipe Contest. Last year I got second place, but just even interviewing my mom about the recipe that was a fourth generation recipe at this part that I learned to make in the same kitchen that four other generations had. I learned all this amazing stuff that my great-grandmother Cora, who the recipe came from, when her husband died in Cass County, it was back in the days where the calling was in the front room. And since they were Catholic, the Ku Klux Klan had burned a cross in the field across from there. And all she did was shut the drapes and carried on. And I just think that, you know, I got my, hopefully, my mom's and my grandmother's sense of being able to entertain and be nonplussed and move on with your life. But I had never heard that story before.
Now, the story is a part of that contest. So it's not just the recipe or not just tasting the food, but it's the story that counts, too.
And I think that's why I got second place, because I'm a better writer than a cook. So.
I don't think people know about all these things. I mean, people in general, just your regular people walking by eating the corn dogs. Maybe they don't know about all those contests.
Well, I've made it a mission, and I think that everybody should do it. It's $30 to enter, and you get 6 spare tickets, so that's like 6 half-price tickets. And it's fun to see your things and to see everybody else's things and to look at everybody else's stuff and try to decide what. And the judges, especially in the culinary part, they are amazing. They write notes, so I really learned from their feedback and things.
Now, what did they tell you about the snickerdoodles? Because that was the first prize, and they were really good.
I think they just put excellent. Other years, I've gotten things like your baking powder might be old, or, you know, too brown on the bottom. And I always think there should be almost weighted, because I live in a house that's almost 100 years old with no air conditioning, and my stove is an old General Electric stove from the 50s, so, you know, I'm always happy when anything turns out.
17 days of the fair is a lot. That's a lot of coming. Are there other things that you particularly look forward to, you know, Pioneer Village and the home and family arts stuff, but other things too?
I do. The daily parade is so much fun. I call it the tractor parade, but it's actually called the daily parade, and it happens at 6:30 every evening, and it's so much fun. I am lucky enough to hitch a ride occasionally, and they always give you these directions to smile and wave, like you can't not smile. And it's fun to see everybody enjoy that. And the food, of course.
Now, do you have favorite fair foods that you like to try, or do you try the new things, or do you have old favorites?
A combination. I love all the commodities people, the pork producers and the Hoosier ribeye and the cattlemen, and of course the dairy bar. So I make it a point to have all those. And I do like to try the new things. There was some survey this year that what state fair food are you? And mine was the cheeseburger on a stick. So I still need to try that.
Have you been in the beer and wine area? That's new this year.
I did. Different breweries and different wineries are here different days. So it's not the same people each day, which is kind of fun. So it gives you a chance to, you know, really have an excuse to go back and see what's happening.
Did you try anything new or that you hadn't tried before, just being out and about around town, something different?
I did. It was nice that there are wineries and breweries from across the state. But it was very interesting to learn, and people are there from the breweries to tell you about their product.
What other things are you looking ahead to doing?
I am looking forward to being here during the day so that I can see the thrashing ring and all of those things. And, of course, the food. I had a little bit of a tragedy yesterday. I had to run back to work. So I got a pork chop sandwich and those wonderful pit potatoes to go, and I dropped them. So I somehow caught, like, two potatoes.
So anything else to talk about at the fair?
Yes, I can't believe I forgot the whole 4-H part, because I think I'm the only person in my neighborhood with 4-H license plates.
Oh, do you still have 4-H license plates?
Yes. My big disappointment is that I was only in for 9 years because I aged out. I didn't start till I was 11. So the 4-H buildings are renovated. It's amazing to see all the projects.
And that's what's in there, the kids' displays?
The kids' displays. And then in the agricultural horticulture building, you'll find all the fruits and vegetables. And my job is with Second Helpings. I'm the director of programs. And for the last 4 years, we've rescued the 4-H vegetables. So you might have noticed in the old days, especially now that the fair is 17 days, that you'd see these poor carrots withering on the plates. So now we come after the first weekend, and we got 1,480 pounds of vegetables, including a 13-pound watermelon.
We've been talking with State Fair fan Nora Spitznagel, Director of Programs with Second Helpings in Indianapolis. You can also check out her Buzzing Around Town column in the Broad Ripple Gazette. Now, I'm not as dedicated a State Fair fan as Nora Spitznagel, but I certainly do like the food. And this year I got to try plenty when I judged the 2015 Indiana State Fair Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off. Shoup's Country Foods sponsors the event, and Cindy Shoup Casey and her hardworking crew put on a great cook-off. This was my second year judging, and I spent the day last Saturday with 17 other barbecue judges inside the Home and Family Arts Building tasting 5 categories of barbecue. A pork burger, chicken, pork loin, ribs, and a free-for-all, anything-goes kind of category, which included bacon-wrapped shrimp and Mexican corn on the cob. It was a great day filled with great food, and Cindy explained how the cook-off competition came about.
How we got started is we decided, of course, we always loved competing in barbecue competitions, and so you got to have kind of a love for barbecue. We started it at the county level, and we thought, wow, there's nothing like that at the state fair. Wouldn't it be great if we could start something like that at the state fair? And so we came to the Indiana State Fair and pitched it to them, and because we've always loved the state fair. I mean, we've all been here since we were babies, so we know every inch of the whole fairgrounds. It's our favorite place to be from sunup to sundown. We've never missed an Indiana State Fair, and it's been great developing all the relationships with the other commodities too, with Indiana corn, Indiana soybean, and then of course some of our products are made at Indiana Packers, our mini hog roast, and so it's been great relationships for all of us to pull together and get this contest going. So
does Shoup's compete in barbecue contests yourselves? Had you already always done that?
We used to years ago. We traveled as far as Iowa, like the World Pork Expo. We did do that. But, yeah, we used to travel a little bit of the barbecue circuit. That's kind of how we first got started. We've been in business for 36 years, and we've just always loved barbecue.
But this year, I wanted to hear from some of the competitors, too, who showed up before 6 o'clock in the morning to get started cooking. So I checked out some of the teams and some of their impressive-looking barbecue rigs before the competition started.
My name is Bill Henninger, and the name of my team is Always Smoking Something, and we're from Patoka Lake in Bird's Eye, Indiana. We run Patoka Lake Marina down there. My girlfriend bought me a smoker for my birthday 2 years ago. Ever since then, we've been going to contests. Today we're cooking chicken, ribs, pork loin, and Hogzilla burger, and I'm doing my own specialty sausage burger. My ribs are pretty good. They're my best feature. I did Franklin Smoke on the Square about a month ago and got 12th in the state with my ribs, and it's fun. Whether you win or not, this is a blast being here. And I've never been in an area that's had so many people. I'm used to 5,000 and 6,000 people being seen in a whole weekend. I think I've seen more than that just this morning.
So what's the attraction of coming to an event to participate?
A day off from work. And I love cooking. I'm really good at this. It's fun. I get to hang out with my friends, and I get to meet all kinds of people. And that's actually the best thing. And all these guys that you cook with, I mean, no one's mean, no one's mad, everybody's happy, everybody wants to help each other. I mean, it's just a cool thing to do.
All right, I'm Todd Wright. I'm with the Sugar Creek Smokers. One of our team members is from Indianapolis, and two of us are from Franklin. We all work together at Caterpillar in Franklin, Indiana. So we all started, you know, backyard grilling, and then we all decided to actually, he signed us up for a contest this year. He just said, hey, he called us up out of the blue and said, hey, I signed us up. So that's how we got started.
So this is your first year at this?
Yeah, we started in Hope, Indiana, and then we did a New Pal about 2 weeks ago. So, and we actually won the grand champion in the backyard. So on our second contest, so we were really excited about that.
Oh, that's great. And you said this is a new rig over here, a new setup?
Yeah, Chris, one of our teammates, he just went down to Owensboro, Kentucky last year. It's from a Sling and Steel Smoker from Owensboro, Kentucky. So he drove down there last Saturday and got it and seasoned it up all day and everything. So, yeah, we're really excited about it.
Now, are you entering all the categories today?
Yes, we're doing all the categories. So, yeah, it is. But it's fun. That's what we're here for, you know, to have fun. So,
how has it been? Do you like the... You know, the competition, you know, what's the appeal, I guess?
I think it's the competition, you know, just it's the excitement, you know, and the turn in and then seeing how you place and everything. I think it's the big thing. But, you know, it's a lot of work, you know, to get it. Then at the end, you know, to see where you placed, I think it is just and to meet the other people. You know, I mean, we meet a lot of people from, you know, from all other states and everything, you know, and you get a lot. I mean, everybody's real great and they talk about all their, you know, help you out, anything you need. And, you know, so it's a learning experience, but. Something to release, you know, let off a little steam after work.
My name is Kevin Carter. We're from New Palestine, Indiana. Our team name is Old Lantern Barbecue. We have it's a family team. We just enjoy our family doing this. And
so have you been to this one before?
This is our third year at the State Fair. And once we did it, like I say, 3 years ago, and we just loved it. And we just enjoy coming out here and talking to all the people and all the excitement of the fair.
It is a big crowd. This is a great day for it, right? Well,
today is a beautiful day. It's a perfect day at the fair today.
Now, do you participate in a lot of competitions?
I do three competitions. We do our Hancock County Fair, and we do a KCBS tournament in New Palestine also. Do the backyard cook division.
Now, the KCBS is a little more strict. I'm a KCBS certified judge. They're kind of sticklers, right?
Yes, they are. They're a little more stickler about everything. And so this one's, you kind of know what you're getting, what you're judged on there. This is kind of more open. You never know what the judges will choose from here.
What's the appeal of a barbecue, of competition barbecue? You know, what is it about it that makes it so much fun?
Well, we started with our son doing his 4-H years. They had 4-H barbecue, and we enjoyed doing it with him, watching him and everything, and he did good. And then he got too old for 4-H, and they opened up a adult division, and we just had fun with that. And it's just become, you know, you meet a lot of different people, and you get to do a lot of different stuff. So we just enjoy that.
Yeah. So you don't travel too far, right?
No, we don't travel too far. We just around the area right here. We've talked about going a little farther, but since we do backyard, we have to take everything with us. I don't have a trailer with my sleep in. When we did the one in New Palestine, we have to sleep outside that night to do everything. So
because some of the people, I mean, there's big rigs and RVs, and it becomes a very big thing for some people.
Oh, yes, it's a very big thing for some people. It becomes a lifestyle more than just a hobby. To us, this is just a fun hobby yet. It's not a lifestyle yet.
Now, when it comes to judging these teams, well, I know what I look for, but I wanted to hear from a fellow judge as well.
Ben Wicker, and I'm the Director of Producer Outreach with Indiana Pork.
So tell me, is this your first competition judging, you know, a barbecue sort of cook-off?
While I think I've sampled lots of barbecue in the past, this is my first competition setting.
So how was it? What did you think of it?
Oh, it's been a great time so far. It's been interesting to see everyone's different take on their view of barbecue and from the dry rubs to the different sauces. I've really enjoyed it so far.
Did you have a favorite category, maybe? Because we've judged a pork burger, chicken, pork loin, ribs, and we're going to go into the Anything Goes category. Have you had a favorite?
Well, I'm curious to see what shows up in the Anything Goes. You have to default back to the ribs. It's impossible to beat that as a barbecue cut.
Now, are you a barbecue fan? I mean, would you call yourself a barbecue connoisseur, aficionado, or a barbecue fan of some sort?
connoisseur aficionado is probably a bit much, but certainly a fan, and like to practice at home just a little bit whenever I can. So it's fun to see how people that are truly gifted at the craft can do their work.
So you do cook barbecue at home?
I have a small smoker, and I'll play around a little bit, but not as much as what the chefs up here today obviously do. So,
are there any things you can see that have been problems so far that you might have identified as you were judging?
The pork loin can always be a challenge, especially in a barbecue setting, and just want to remind everybody that with pork loin now, you only have to cook it to 145 degrees, and that's going to make a much juicier, tender cut of pork if you leave it there at 145.
I think that is a problem. I think people do tend to overcook that one, definitely. Now, we didn't see anything undercooked. I don't think sometimes that can be a problem in the chicken category, but so far, at least for our table, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, chicken has been spot on as far as cooking and preparation.
Now, what about the burger? Did you like any of those in particular?
Yeah, we had a really interesting one that was kind of a take on breakfast. They had a waffle for a bun and a fried egg on top. That was really neat, and some good variations on the classic as well.
Now, we're going to see anything goes, and it can't have a dessert category. So that's the only thing we might not see is the dessert. Are you looking forward to anything in particular, maybe in that category?
I'm curious to see what sort of different things they can come up with. You know, while we said a scoop of vanilla ice cream would be great right about now, we'll push through on this category, see what we have, and see what variations they come up with, and maybe get that scoop ice cream at the end.
And while the Q-Pit team was the grand champion winner this year, you never can tell who will win in one of these competitions. The crazy thing is, we've had a lot of professionals enter the contest, but I will tell you, it's the backyard barbecuers that have a passion for it that usually come out on top and win. And you do not have to have a fancy rig to win. That's the other thing great about this contest is that, you know, by KCBS, there's a lot of great barbecue contests out there, and they have very specific rules. And we have rules, too, but we are not going to limit someone by only cooking specifically on charcoal or something like that. So with this, you can cook on gas, you can cook on charcoal, you can cook on whatever you want. So we've tweaked the rules so that they will fit anyone. You do not have to have an elaborate a setup to be able to do it. As a matter of fact, one funny story is there was one guy, the first year we did it, I'll never forget, he had only entered one category. And we said, you know, if you'll enter the other categories, you'll have a chance for either the grand or reserve prize, but you won't have enough points if you only enter one category. So we talked him into entering all the categories. He came with a very basic setup, and he ended up getting reserve grand champion overall and ended up beating a lot of the fancy rigs. So really, it's a contest for anyone. All you've got to do is just love barbecue. That's really all you've got to do.
We've been talking with Cindy Shoup Casey of Shoup's Country Foods. For more information on this year's Indiana State Fair Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off, look for Shoup's Country Foods on Facebook. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Well, part of the appeal of the Indiana State Fair is definitely the food. And some of that food can get pretty outrageous. If it can be stuck on a stick and deep fried, someone's going to do it. But is any of it actually tasty and worth trying? I'm personally a fan of the deep-fried brownies, but what would an actual chef think of some of the fair food favorites? I found out when Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant and Bar in Indianapolis, went on a little state fair tasting tour.
The donut was hot, it was sticky, and eating it with vegetables in general, eating a donut with vegetables is really, really bizarre for me, so I don't think I would go for that one again, for sure.
In fact, the donut burger was his least favorite deep-fried item, and we tried plenty.
Most of the things we tried today were pretty scary. Most of them were hot, greasy, and had some component that was either extremely bad or extremely good. I'd say the burger with the donut was pretty disgusting. But the deep fried butter, as scary as it sounds and as horrible as it sounds, is actually pretty delicious.
Yes, you heard right. A fine dining chef is going on the record as actually enjoying deep fried butter.
I was expecting it to be disgusting because the idea of deep frying butter just sounds morbid, but it was really, really good. Yeah, I would definitely eat that again.
But just how do they make deep fried butter? I wondered the same thing, and so I asked the concessionaire. And once you find out, it starts to sound a little bit better. They take the butter, mix it with sugar and cinnamon, shape it into a small cube or ball, freeze it, then dip it in batter, and deep fry it. You take a bite, and you can see the butter cube inside in a pool of melted butter.
It held its shape really well, and then when you bit into it, it was literally like an explosion of butter in the center of it, yeah. It was pretty awesome.
Now, the deep-fried Twinkie wasn't nearly as big a hit with the chef. He was hoping for a strawberry shortcake kind of taste, which is how the well-meaning vendor described a deep-fried Twinkie topped with strawberry syrup. Unfortunately, it didn't really make you think of a strawberry shortcake at all.
The deep-fried Twinkie, they misinformed me and told me that it would taste like a strawberry shortcake, which I like. And it did not taste like that at all. It was very hot, very sticky. It was dangerous to eat, to say the least. But it was good for a Twinkie, I'll give it that.
Now, also on our state fair food tour, we spotted a buffalo vendor whose wares sounded promising. So we tried a bratwurst, called a buff brat, on the menu. But we were disappointed with the somewhat bland flavor.
Out of all the things that I love about bratwurst, I don't think that it probably met the mark for me. It didn't have the snap or the good spice to it, but it was definitely interesting. It was an interesting bratwurst for sure. And I love bratwurst, so maybe I'm probably a hard critic on that one.
And while we were taste testing classic and not so classic fair foods, we also tried a few of the finalists in the State Fair Signature Food Contest. The long lines at the dairy bar kept us away from the mozzarella stick grilled cheese and milkshake contender, and we just couldn't find the Gobble Gobble food truck to try the Mac Daddy mac and cheese. But we managed to try the rest, including the Fruit Twister Shake-Up, which was the winner, the deep-fried cheeseburger basket on a stick, and the funnel cake ice cream sandwich.
The drink was definitely good. I liked it a lot. Really refreshing. The deep-fried cheeseburger was actually not bad. It kind of reminded me of a tater tot. I expected like a whole burger, battered and deep-fried, but it was more like almost like a meatball with hash browns that was breaded and fried. So not horrible. Not my favorite thing in the world, but pretty good.
The funnel cake ice cream sandwich, though, was hard to eat. In fact, we had to use a knife and fork.
Extremely, extremely messy. Yeah, I would... And to try to eat that as a sandwich would be literally impossible.
But even though we might have had fewer hits and more misses, our fair food extravaganza was definitely fun. And the chef, who's already a big fan of the fair, said he might even try it again.
I come to the fair every year. I normally just stare and, you know, I'm thinking, wow, that does not sound good, or I'll watch people eat it. But we know we always come and get a pork tenderloin or deep fried vegetables or something, but I'm always curious on what these things taste like, so I'm glad that I tried them. And I imagine next year if I see another crazy one, I'll probably try it just for the fun of it.
We've been talking and tasting with local chef Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant and Bar in Indianapolis. Stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We've been talking fair food today here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, but we are also looking ahead to a different sort of food and agriculture event. Dig-Ins, A Taste of Indiana, is coming up later this month. That festival, which takes place in White River State Park on Sunday, August the 30th, features local chefs serving up delicious and creative food made with Indiana ingredients. Dig-In Executive Director Tom England
fills us in on how Dig In's Taste of Indiana Festival came about. Tell me a little bit about sort of Dig In's background and what the festival is and maybe how it all came about.
Sure. So Dig In, Taste of Indiana is actually the name of the festival. Dig In is the organization. So Taste of Indiana was founded to promote Indiana food, beverage, and agriculture. So we want to support all the things that are grown here in the state and really promote it so that people can see, you know, how the chefs are using it, give people ideas of where to find it and how to use it. So, yeah, we bring in chefs from across the state and pair them with farms across the state so that they get to try and the consumer gets to try all the food from around the area. We're a unique festival because we actually pay for all the food that's served in the park. And so we go to the farms and actually buy the product and have it delivered right to the restaurant where they're preparing the product. So, you know, the chef doesn't have to spend a lot of money trying to get the food. They don't go out of business because they're paying for 3,000 samples, really, of food that's going to be given out. And then the farmer isn't asked for donations as well. And so we pay the farmer a fair wage for everything that's served. Instead of going out and looking for donations for stuff.
So all the produce and the product used comes from Indiana. So it's really highlighting the ingredients as well as the chefs who are creating from these ingredients.
Right, absolutely. And then that's what it's all about is, you know, what is in season now and what are we eating now? And so, you know, why do we pick August 30th, the last Sunday in August every year to do this? It's because there's a cross-section of seasons, and so we can get the stuff that is late summer and early fall all at one time, and people can see what's the best right now.
So tell me how A Taste of Indiana, how Dig In came together as an organization and how the Taste of Indiana Festival happened.
Yeah, that's a great story. So Alice Waters, who is really the mother of local food since 1972, was in town for a speaking engagement. And myself and Neil Brown and Regina Mihalik all had the great opportunity to sit down to lunch with her and spent a couple hours talking to her. And we brought up, you know, we used to have this festival called Taste of Indiana that became Taste of California when it got overtaken by California wines and elf and ears and all kinds of stuff that was not really Indiana. So she said, well, why don't you just do it right? And so we looked at each other and said, well, let's do it. And so we got together with the Department of Agriculture and Indiana Department of Tourism and kind of made it happen. And so, you know, that was 8 years ago. We sat down at the table, and this is actually our third or sixth festival. So there was a couple years of planning between and some fundraising to be able to get the money to do this event. Because we're buying all the protein, because we're coordinating everything, it is a very expensive festival to put on. And people don't realize ticket sales barely cover the cost of the festival. And so we're not making any money on the festival through ticketing. It's, you know, we're truly a nonprofit that's there to promote everybody who is in the festival.
So when people come to the festival, it's in White River State Park. And it's a big festival, you know, it's kind of spread out. I mean, there's a lot. So you have how many vendors?
Yeah, so there's 48 restaurants that'll be there. There's 12 wineries, 18 breweries. And we also have Indiana artisans. I think there's 10 Indiana artisans that are going to be there as well. And the great thing is, you know, you pay one ticket price and you get to taste everything in the park. There's not additional fees in the park unless you want to buy additional alcohol. You can buy additional drinks. But, yeah, there's no additional cost that you're going to have to pay once you get in.
Well, now that's assuming you're assuming that people could actually eat all of these samples. That's a lot of food. Now, and I know a few people who do try to work through the list every year and get a bite of everything. But really, that's a lot of food.
That's a lot of food. And if you had just the food from the 48 restaurants there, it's 9 pounds of food.
Oh my gosh, that is so much.
9 pounds, yeah. And so I'm always amazed because two or three people will come out to me, you know, in the year after the event, and people will say, "Yeah, I tried everything." I'm like, "No, you didn't. I don't believe that." Maybe they did try, but they couldn't have eaten everything. That's just insane.
It is. So that's kind of a difficult challenge to go through. But you do have a list of what restaurants are going to be there, so people could look ahead of time and maybe plan out their visit so they know which ones they really want to try the most.
Yeah. The press release just came out this week, actually. And so you can go online at digindiana.org and see everybody who's there and what they're serving this year. All the 48 restaurants are going to be there and what they're serving this year. And probably by the end of next week, they'll have the map up as well, so you can find out where they're at in the festival grounds and be able to plan your route as you come in.
So it is a big tasting event, but that's not all that there is at Dig In. And I know that, you know, you have some music, of course we have the wine and the beer, but you have some new things this year maybe, right?
So the big new thing is the chef's competition. So sous chefs from around the state are coming together to compete to find out who is the best sous chef in the state. So there's 9 sous chefs, 3 rounds of competition with 3 different chefs each time. It'll be a mystery basket, so they don't know what's going to be in their basket that they're going to have to use. So think of like Chopped. So they'll have 30 minutes to cook, and then the winner from each round will go on to a final competition.
Oh, so that's kind of fun. Now, this kind of brings in the educational component as well, which I think is a big part of Dig In.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want people to find out, you know, what should be concerned about with food, or, you know, learn about how food is grown and raised. You know, eating is an agricultural act. And so as they open their baskets, the stuff that is in the basket, the farmer is going to be there to talk about how it was grown or raised and all of that great stuff. So there'll be an MC kind of coordinating, like an Alton Brown, who will interview those farmers. And then there's also a Kevin Brosh type person in the kitchen talking about how stuff's being cooked.
We've been talking with Dig In Executive Director Tom England. Stay with us for more on Dig In, A Taste of Indiana, here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis, eskenazihealth.edu. Well, local food just keeps getting more and more attention in Indiana, and this will be the 6th year for Dig In's A Taste of Indiana, which takes place August 30th. The popular food festival draws thousands to White River State Park to enjoy samples of creative local food made by Indiana chefs. Attendees can also try Indiana wines and local craft beers, watch a chef's competition, listen to local music. Dig In Executive Director Tom England tells us what else we can expect at this year's fest.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of fun stuff going on. Obviously, you can taste, but you can watch the competition. Yelp will be there so that you can sit down and relax in between your eating rounds and recharge your batteries. The Star will be doing tours at the top of each hour so that Liz Biru, who's the food writer, will go around with you and go behind the scenes and talk to some of the chefs and try some of the food and get their understanding of food. So a lot of little things going on. Music all around, so you can hear different music around the park. And just, you know, it's always a beautiful day to just go out there and enjoy and look back on the city and kind of reflect on, you know, everything that the state has to offer.
It is a family friendly event, right? So it's an all ages sort of thing.
It is, and we have tiered tickets. So there's a children's ticket, and then there's a under 4 get in free. But one of the things that we think is important as chefs is that kids understand food at an early age, and so we're very conscious of not serving the chicken nuggets and spaghetti and meatballs, but actually, talking to the kids and, you know, talking about different foods and tastes and letting them learn and expand their palate a little bit too.
And it is in White River State Park, and so there's a garden right there so that you can actually see some things growing.
Yeah, the Slow Food Garden, as you're walking into the festival, you walk through the garden, and they have people there that will be talking throughout the day about what they're doing in the garden and, you know, the seasonalities here in the state and what we can grow and what we can't grow. And so, yeah, I mean, it's all part of White River, which, you know, is a great foundation that really is about education of agriculture as well.
So now tell me a little bit about some of the details, you know, as people come in, what they can expect, where things are located, and how much it all costs.
So as you come in, you'll come into an area where you can get your tickets, or if you don't have tickets already, but you can also check in and you'll get a little glass so that you can taste everything throughout the park. You get into the park with a passport, and this passport will let you walk around the park. And as you taste things, they'll stamp your passport to let you know that you've been there. So it's a fun time to just kind of walk around and get your passport checked off. So just like most people with international travel, you want to try to get as many stamps in there as you can. So
and some people, like you said earlier, some people do try to hit every booth,
yes,
you know, and get a taste of everything. That would, I think, be a big challenge. But you can certainly try that.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as ticketing too, so there's early entry tickets. So for those people who want to try to do everything, you can get in an hour early as a VIP or with the early entry ticket. So with early entry, you get in an hour early. Those tickets are $60. With the VIPs, it includes an area that is just kind of a lounge area for all the VIPs with their own air-conditioned bathroom and all. But you also, in that area, will have four restaurants that are James Beard nominees. So you get to try some food that other people don't. And you also have beer and wines that aren't open to the general public as well. So it's a nice exclusive little area with the VIP. Most important part of VIP is parking space. So you have a reserved parking space in the parking garage there at White River State Park. Those tickets are $120 a piece. And those actually will sell out quickly. That's always the first one to sell out. General admission tickets. General admission's noon to 5. And those are only $35 a piece. And again, I mean, that's a great deal to be able to try 48 different restaurants and beers and wine and just really enjoy 5 hours of tasting.
In a lovely setting, you know, so you're right downtown, you have the beautiful view of downtown, you're on the canal in White River State Park, and you have all these food booths, and it really is spread out, so it's not as crowded as you might think with all that.
Yeah, we limit the number of tickets to 4,000 paid tickets so that it's not too crowded. We found out in the third year we had a couple thousand more people than that, and it got too big. There were too many lines. And so we intentionally keep it so that you never have to wait for more than 4 or 5 minutes for a tasting. Sometimes the lines look big, but they move quickly. And so, yeah, it should be a relaxing day instead of a stressful wait in this line, wait in that line type day.
And so in addition to the restaurants, you also have food trucks that are part of the festival as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So food trucks are an important part of the food movement here in the state. And there's a lot of food trucks that are using local food. And so we support them. So I should say that all 48 of those chefs that are in the park all use local food and promote local food on a daily basis. We really vet them and make sure that, you know, they're talking about food and that is grown in the state and they're using the food that's grown in the state. So we get a lot of people who want to be in the festival but just aren't doing that. And so, you know, we coach them on how they can do it in the future and you know, maybe come back the next year.
Now, tell me where people can go for some more information and for the ticket information and all the details about the chefs and the food options and where they can get tickets then.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do all of that at digindiana.org. Just click on ticketing information or festival information, and you can see everything there and buy your tickets right there online.
We've been talking Dig In, A Taste of Indiana with Executive Director Tom England. For more information and to buy tickets, go to digindiana.org. Well, we talk a lot about local food projects here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and it's always fun when things really work out. For example, we talked a while back with Mike Sale of Brew Bracket about efforts to launch a home game version of the popular beer tasting event. I'm happy to report that Brew Bracket's Kickstarter campaign is fully funded, so we'll all be able to play along with the Brew Bracket tasting game at home. Brew Bracket co-founder Mike Sale explained to us last month how it all came about.
Yeah, this goes back probably 7 years to a friend's apartment, and they did the light beer taste test. And it wasn't quite set up like a tournament, but it was just blind tasting of familiar Bud Light, Busch Light, et cetera, macro brands. And the punchline was that once you stripped the labels away, nobody knew at all the beer they swore by, the beer they pledged their allegiance, their wallets to. And it really, I think that planted the seed that there's this very interesting blind tasting aspect that strips away what you thought you knew about a beer and you go by taste alone.
So from that moment then, how did it develop into something that was so public? I mean, Brew Bracket was a big thing right from the start, right?
Yeah, late 2010, we had the idea and we put it all together, worked with the Indiana Brewers Guild for an event in March of 2011. And we led out of the gate with a tournament bracket with 16 Indiana Brewers and IPA. We use the familiar bracket format, and it simplifies the tasting process. We give people two beers at a time, and that's it. So you pick which one of these two do I like better, and in that process, learn a little bit about why you might like one IPA better than another.
Okay, so you had that, and then where did it go from there? Because it sort of took off, right?
Yeah, the IPA ends up being a great choice for the first round. We did it at the fairgrounds. We had capacity of 400, and we were pushing our limits. And the brewers, we were able to prove to them that we could do this. We had to kind of prove ourselves to the guild and show that we weren't just two jokers that just wanted some free beer.
So you did. So there was a little bit of skepticism about whether you could pull this off, right?
Yeah, exactly. 400 people, 16 beers in a bracket. How fast can people pour? How fast can you fill glasses? And we made it work. It was about a three-hour event. And then from there, actually later in 2011, we went to stouts, and that was our second style. Since then, we ended up having done 10 events.
What's been the feedback?
Maybe you tell me what you think, but my favorite is what I never get tired of hearing is just, I never thought I liked this style as much as I did, or I never understood the depth of the style. And again, that side by side, what you walk away with is we're trying to help make people feel a little smarter about beer. I don't like all IPAs, but I like ones that are a little citrusy or fruity. And now when you go to a big bar with 200 taps, you can at least give the bartender a couple rounded statements that help them find something for you.
So it was kind of fun going through the brew bracket home game with IPAs.
Yeah. And this was the session IPA. So these are at least ratcheted down a little. The IPA can be a palate buster. So these are under 5%. You can have a few of them and keep kind of going on with your evening. So for the kind of launch of the home kit, we wanted to lead off with the session IPAs.
Well, now tell me about the home kit and what's involved in it and what people, you know, what you get in this kit and what you do with it.
So like I said, we did start, you know, many years ago with the light beer taste test. And then before doing Brew Bracket, we piloted a wheat event and some different ones where we ran this event with about 8 people in our house. And it was a hit at that point. It gave us the confidence to do the live events, but we've had people continuing to push for, you know, hey, can we get something where we can do this at our own homes?
So you've got it to put it together. So the kit includes glasses and pitchers and score sheets. So you've put it all together for people.
That's right. Yeah. Over 5 years, we feel comfortable. We proved the concept. It works. It's a great way to taste beer. It's a lot of fun. The bracket's familiar. The competition is fun. People love their bracket to win. They want to pick it. But in reality, when they walk away, it's more about, hey, this is what I liked, and that's interesting. I'm going to go find that again. So we packaged it all up. We have a kit that has all of the host guides. You can run this yourself, 2 pitchers, and then the glassware, the voting brackets, and the pencils. The goal is that we've really enabled it so that one host can kind of have the fun of being the man or woman behind the curtain, and then everybody else gets to blindly taste and really enjoy the bracket side.
So you could have, you know, a national brand in there. You could have a home brew in there as well. So you could really mix it up and put some ringers in there.
That's right. Yeah. Tonight we did the session IPA. And so we brought in Founders just because that's a classic. Everything else came from Indiana, but we snuck a couple home brews into the mix. And that's, you can do that when you're doing this at your house. It's anything really the host wants to do.
So it's very fun. Now explain a little bit about what the kits will cost and the whole idea of launching a Kickstarter campaign to get this going.
Yeah, the Kickstarter campaign has been frightening, to say the least. We've worked really hard to have a lot of logistics lined up ahead of time and make sure that we can make the kits for what we think we can make them for. So there's been months of work leading up to now. The experience kit, which is the one that contains glassware, pitchers, voting cards for up to 8 people and is reusable, that's $35. And then we have an express kit, which we took away all the glasses and pitchers. We heard some feedback, hey, I've got a ton of glasses. I've been to a brew fest every year for the past 10 years. And we said, great. So we got these little reusable decals that go on the glasses and mark them for the orange and the gray. So you can reuse what you have around your house. And that one comes down then to $15.
Now, tell me a little bit about how the Kickstarter works, how long it's going to last, and what you're trying to raise.
Yeah, so we ended up putting a target of $10,000 on Kickstarter, which is something to 300 or 400 kits. We obviously have a great presence and some wonderful friends in Indianapolis, but this would be available nationally. And Kickstarter recommends keeping it under 30 days, so we're running it for about 25.
Now, what are some of the things that, you know, the people who donate to the cause, what are some of the things that they might get as their premiums? Is that what how it works?
I think so, yeah, they call them rewards, and the two primary are that exactly what I talked about, the experience kit and the express kit. We've got even a $10 print at home kit. We'll send you some of those reusable decals and give you the PDFs so that you can kind of arm yourself. That's really the down and dirty, just get you into the game. And then we actually have a we call it a handcrafted kit, and that's Ryan and I building a wooden box, doubling everything inside of the box, and you know, very custom, kind of hand numbered. And Ryan's great at this type of stuff. I'm great at watching him do this type of stuff. So we only have 25 of those going out. So that's kind of a fun, very limited edition version of the game.
So now tell me a little bit about who's involved with this. You mentioned Ryan. So how did who's involved and how did it come about?
Yeah, that's great. So Ryan Coyle is my co-founder, and we met through actually his wife and at his wedding. His wedding was a destination wedding, so I was not stealing him from the bride. We were hanging out in a pool over a couple beers, and that's where this initial concept came from. And then Jill Vaughn has been a wonderful asset to our team. She helps us with a lot of the social and both social media as well as social at the brackets, so as a butterfly running around and saying hello to everybody, making them happy. Again, the real game is that you and your friends in a very safe, fun environment with that familiar bracket get to taste a bunch of new beers or beers in a different manner. I've often been the man behind the curtain, but when I'm sitting at the table, I'm surprised every time. I walk away thinking way more highly of a beer that I had some jaded perception of beforehand, and go out and refill my beer fridge with some new favorites.
We've been talking with Mike Sale of Brew Bracket, which just completed a successful Kickstarter campaign. For more information, check out brewbracket.com. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Thanks for tuning in this week, and thanks also to our guests, Indiana State Fair superfan Nora Spitznagel, Cindy Shoup-Casey and participants of the State Fair's Backyard Barbecue Cook-Off, Dean Sample of Meridian Restaurant and Bar, Tom England, Executive Director of Dig In, A Taste of Indiana, and Mike Sale of Brew Bracket. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.